Welcome to the State of Sound podcast, produced by the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. A companion series to the blockbuster exhibit, The State of Sound, a world of music from Illinois. Now playing at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum.
To the State of Sound recording studio here at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield, Illinois. And we have the esteemed guest, John Langford and John Szymanski. Thanks for coming down to Springfield.
It's an absolute pleasure. Yes. The exhibition's blown my mind already.
Well, let's start about
that. I haven't had a look really yet, but it's beautiful. It's really, really good.
Well, talk about your involvement in the exhibition, Mekons, Waco Brothers, and Sundowners, for people who are listening may not know about it.
Well, I can't really claim this. Sundowners, the Sundowners were a very important band for me when I first came to Chicago. We came here looking for kind of genuine honky-tonk thrills, as the Mekons, a bunch of art students from the north of England obsessed with country and western music. And when we got to America, we were sad to find that basically most of it had gone and it had been replaced by new country and sort of suburban rock with a cowboy hat on it. And you couldn't really find any of those places anymore. And we looked all over the country. I was in Nashville. And I was, you know, they were kind of tumbleweeds blowing across Lower Broad in Nashville in the 80s. The Grand Ole Opry had moved out to the suburbs. The Ryman was boarded up. It was just, it was heartbreaking. And I met Johnny Cash around that time, and he told me he'd been fired by his record label and he didn't get played on country music radio anymore. He actually said, "I don't get played on country radio. George Jones doesn't get played on country radio. Merle Haggard." We were like, how can this possibly be? It's insane. And then one night after a gig at the Cubby Bear, up at a ballpark in Wrigleyville, the Mekons, who had been shopping that day at Alcala's on Chicago Avenue and were kitted up with cowboy hats and shirts and belt buckles and boots and everything brand new like English punk rockers tend to do. You know, I wish I thought Alcala's was fantastic because it was a kind of gateway into this kind of cool world of, like, you know, you have this, it's a Mexican store really, but there was mostly...
He was the nudie of Chicago.
Yeah, but mostly Alcala's, it was like mostly... You know, mostly black people and Mexican people in there buying stuff. And it was kind of like, oh, yeah, you want to become an American? You can be American by buying this shirt. And it's like, it's a cool civilian uniform. And it fitted us perfectly. But that night we wandered into the Double R Ranch, or the R&R Ranch, down by the Greyhound bus station. Some people took us down there to see the Sundowners. I guess it was... We'd finished playing, so it was probably about 2 a.m, and these three guys had been up there all night, probably from about 8 o'clock, and I think they kept playing till 5 a.m. or something ridiculous. And they saw us come in, and they couldn't believe it, because we were like, looks like we got a band here. And we're going like, oh, yeah. And they said, oh, we were. And then they stopped playing, and they just talked to us for about 10 minutes. And they're going, look, are you the steel guitar player? So, no, we don't have a steel guitar player. I play guitar. They go, oh, well, good. What are you going to play? And we go, we're not going to play anything. We're not coming up there. You got to be joking. Because it was like, you know, the scene from the Blues Brothers. We thought, we'll get up and get bottled off. But people were so drunk in there that they really didn't mind. And I could tell two of the band, Kurt and Bob, were desperate to get off the stage so they could go to the bar and have a cocktail. So we went up, and Don Walls, the guitar player, didn't get up. And he never got off the stage. Anytime we ever went to the Sundowners Ranch, he always wanted to play. And I remember we got up and said, well, we do this Hank Williams song. And he's gone, like, just play it. Well, it's a Lost Highway, but I think he goes to the 5, but I think we go to the 4. And he's gone, just play it. Just play it. And we murdered this Hank Williams song. It was absolutely awful. There's a great bit in the Mekons documentary film where Joan Delaney, his wife, is interviewed. And she said, he came on one night and he said, you never believe what blew in tonight. She said, what was it? Oh, a bunch of punk rockers from England came in, dressed as cowboys. She said, did you get them up on stage? Yep, of course we did. Were they any good? Nope. But they're willing to learn. Yeah. That's what he said to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was funny, and because I said to him, oh, next time I come back, I'm going to know some songs. I'm going to get out with you guys and play some songs. But the crowd didn't mind at all. We did about 3 songs with them. The audience didn't care. They were also drunk.
So that that hit home with you? That was an authenticity you were.
Well, it was just like they were the real thing. Yeah. And they were the real deal. But also there was another level to it, which I found out later, was that they had loads of opportunities to sort of branch out and go somewhere else. But their friendship, the three of them, it was kind of like something that was kind of rang a bell with what it was like being in the Mekons. It was like it was a social grouping more than it was like a commercial enterprise. You know, they were just happy together. And I think Jethro Burns came and tried to take Kurt Delaney on the road with him, and he wouldn't leave.
Yeah,
he wouldn't go because he just wanted to. Those were. And Joni said to me, you know, like, when they weren't at the club playing, they were playing golf together. And when they weren't playing golf together, they were on the phone. They used to sit around at home and phone each other in the afternoon when they didn't see each other.
Yeah.
They were just three guys that were just totally into each other. You know?
I think one thing, and this is just me, my observations, but that maybe you picked up and maybe you've always been this way, but these guys, the Sundowners, had no musical barriers. I mean, I was looking at some of the stuff I had written about before. They were doing Bobby Darin songs, and Fats Domino came in there one night, and they played with Fats Domino.
Yeah, Billy there's, Martin, there's a fantastic picture of them with
yeah,
Fats Domino.
They just
on the album that John Rice, our mate, who was actually a kind of deputy Sundowner, a deputy Mekon,
sure,
doing all sorts of things over the years, but he went and when Bob Boyd died, he went and Kurt had already died, and Don had had a stroke. Bob's wife called him and said, we've got a garage full of stuff here. It's all going to go in the dumpster unless you come out and get it. And he went and got 600 hours of tapes,
sure, yeah,
they'd made. And we put an album together for Bloodshot. Well, he put it together, but I was sort of pulled some strings to get it put out. I did the cover painting. And they do Something by the Beatles on that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And they do it like a Western swing. It's like, something in the way she moves. And it's like Bob Wills doing the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know, it's absolutely brilliant.
No
musical barriers and
yeah,
no prejudices about anything they loved. They just loved playing.
That's what's so important today is music today is so compartments and stuff. And these guys and you guys are just across the board. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think music should be breaking down barriers, not building up.
Yeah.
Building up, you know, you put people in genres and say this and that and the other. It's like most of my experiences with musicians all over the world have been like, you can play music together. When I play with like Aboriginal guys in Australia, you know, it's like you just pick up a guitar and you play, you're in, you know. The politician people don't like it so much, but the musicians have a way of.
Talk about them coming up, since we're doing this little podcast thing, they came up to be on the Barn Dance. I mean, some people don't realize that. And I was looking at one of the stories when that Bloodshot CD came out, and then Kurt Delaney was hired as a staff musician for Don McNeil's Breakfast Club. He got a salary of $204 a week.
But, whoa, that's a lot of money in those days.
Yeah. But so talk about them wanting to come up to be on radio and stuff.
I mean, I don't really know the details of it. They just like Chicago was the place to be for them at that point. It wasn't Nashville. If it went, I guess they came up in the 50s and 60s and. But Barn Dance ran till when? The mid 60s or something? Or early 70s?
Early, yeah, right.
You know,
different
and
forms.
They just wanted to be. I mean, through John Rice as well, I met Johnny Frigo, who was he was an Italian violin player, didn't know anything about country music, and he ended up musical director of the WLS Barn Dance. Yeah. He was fantastic, but I said to him, what was the scene like, you know, then, back then? And was it like, you know, did you used to go out afterwards and go to the country clubs? And he went, to the country clubs? Oh, yeah, I played the Bryn Mawr Country Club. I played. No, I don't mean those country clubs.
Chicago, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but there was a scene. There was lots and lots of bars. I mean, do you remember Mr. Ash?
Yeah, the magician guy.
The magician, he came from Armenia, and he, you know, via London, he turned up here from Armenia with a civil engineering degree, but basically wanting to be a rock and roller, and he wanted to play rock and roll. He loved Elvis and Cliff Richard and people like that. And he turns up in Chicago, and they're like, no, it's not rock and roll. You want to play honky-tonk. So he had to go away, and he like went to all the clubs on Randolph Street, I think he said, and where they were, but he would go to all these clubs that had honky-tonk every night. And he goes in there and he just picks up all these songs, and his name's, I forget what his first name was, Ash Baborian. So his name was Ash something or other Baborian. So he changed his name to Country Ash Ryan. Figuring in Chicago, if you had Ryan on the end of your name, you're probably more likely to get gigs. And he would say one night, he said, what? What the hell? This is the band? He said, yeah. He said, I don't know. I know Mexican. Said, I'm not Mexican. I'm from Armenia. But he was fantastic, Mr. Ash. And he, you know, the same experience that, you know, suddenly that was the music that in the, probably on the north side of Chicago and the club scene, everyone was playing. It was honky tonk, you know.
Yeah. Talk about a couple of the items you graciously loaned the museum, especially the artwork there of the three guys.
Well, I did some paintings for the cover. I wanted to paint, but I did the paintings for my, basically because I wanted to paint those guys. I love, you know, I miss them. They're all deceased now, and it's they were just really warm and lovely to me. And I never, you know, I could never really quite tell what they thought of us. But then we'd find out that, you know, I'd find out from John Rice and other people that, you know, they used to talk about us, and we get they'd come and Bob would come and sing on projects of mine. One time he came down and, you know, he's this guy, he's probably about 70.
Bob Boyd.
Bob Boyd turns up at a studio to sing a song on one of the Executioner's last songs. Oh, no, I don't know, he sang on the Bob Wills record we made. It's a Bob Wills tribute record, but he came down to the studio and he put a nose ring in. Did he ruffled his hair up. Yeah, he walked in with a nose ring in. He goes, just thought I'd try and fit in, John. He dressed as a punk. We did a thing at the MCA with the Mekons with Kathy Acker once called Pussy King of the Pirates. And Bob called John Rice and said, how do we get tickets for this? This sounds pretty good. I want to go and see this Pussy King of the Pirates thing.
It was a movie that played on Randolph Street back in the day.
But no, they were game. They were just funny and lovely. They were lovely. They played my wedding, so, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
I never knew if they were coming. And then when they came, they played, and then they wouldn't let me give them any money. So I guess that's respect, you know.
And then there's also the poster from that show we did at Bub City. We did like the...
Well, you instigated that.
Yeah, me and Lee Jones.
You and Mayor Daley and Lee Jones.
Yeah, we got Mayor Daley to declare it Sundowners Day in Chicago.
No, that was fantastic. It meant so much to them.
Yeah, it did.
After those years.
Happy.
They were really, really happy about that.
Yeah.
And we did it two years at Bub City. Yeah. And the Mekons did it the first year. Then the Wacos had actually kind of existed the second year. Yeah. And we did it as well, but...
So the museum pays tribute to them through that. So.
And that's from Hat Schobrin as well, from Nashville, who, you know, just a fantastic historical institution as well.
We'll get into your work with them, too.
Yeah, I did. I've had some really good contacts with the Country Music Hall of Fame, which I didn't really think about ever until I kind of got involved with them. And that's an amazing institution, you know, which does a lot of really, really deep sort of work.
I'll keep it linear, but do you want to do that? Do you want to do the sidewalks thing? As long as we're talking
about this? Yeah,
introduce the song about why it's relevant to the Sundown.
Well, this is one of the ones I said they had 600 hours of tapes that they had a tape machine backstage at the R&R Ranch, and they would when they walked out, somebody would push the button, so they recorded loads. Like John said, he went through about 200 hours of the tapes to make the
John Rice is great
Chicago Country. Awesome, it was called Chicago Country. The album, they had a couple of albums out. Studio albums they did. They did one with Lloyd Maines, which is really beautiful. They did another one, and Robbie Foulkes wrote a song for him. So they were like interested in reaching out to the, you know, what was going on in town. But the I really like the one we put out on Bloodshot because it's all live recordings, and you can hear people clinking glasses and shouting in the background. And there's
like, Lomax thing.
Yeah, but they're hugely professional.
It's like a field recording in the double R room.
But Bob's presence on the microphone is incredible. I mean, I will not do it justice right now, but it's like they weren't like just some hacks knocking it out. They were really, really good, but they knew where they wanted to be, and they knew what their comfort zone was, and all good to them. So this is Sidewalks of Chicago. These Levi's that I've been wearing have been good to me. They just won't admit they're growing old. And though my shirt's made contact with the gutter now and then, at least it keeps my body from the cold. Thank God the folks back home in Harlan County can't see what success has done to me. Would you believe the kids in Holland High School voted me most likely to succeed? Now I'm walking on the sidewalks of Chicago. If I buy the bread, I can't afford the wine. I'm walking on the sidewalks of Chicago, wishing I had lived some other time. It wasn't there too long before I met her. A man, she really swept me off my feet. And she stayed just long enough to make me love her. And now they're sweeping me up off the street. My mama thinks I really made the big time. She's written every day since I've been gone. But she doesn't know that 109 West Charlotte is the address of the West Side Mission Home. And I'm walking on the sidewalks of Chicago. If I buy the bread, I can't afford the wine. Walking on the sidewalks of Chicago, wishing I had lived some other time.
Close enough.
Yeah.
That's for Bob Boyd, Kurt Delaney, and Don Walls.
Great.
My heroes.
Very, very, very nice. John Szymanski, how'd you guys, how did this affiliation begin?
There was a project that John was doing at the Country Music Hall of Fame, which you just mentioned. Through that connection, there was a record that was going to be made with the famous producer, Norbert Putnam.
Norbert
was going to
produce.
Yeah, he was going to produce us. And he brought in, so John brought in my friend Bethany Thomas and Tawny Newsome. And I was playing with Bethany quite a bit in Chicago. And there was one day we went to lunch. She goes, we're going to need a guitar player, I think. And so I was able to kind of work out some songs that John had given Bethany, and I kind of worked out some of the guitar on it.
And basically, I'd written a bunch of pirate sea shanties, and Bethany wanted to turn them into soul classics that could be, do justice to going to Muscle Shoals to record them.
Yeah, isn't that great?
And she took them to John, and her and John worked them out, and they put some sort of groove into them that is very.
What was that like?
It was kind of neat, because I wasn't sure if it was going to work, but, it was. I kind of knew the way that me and her had played for a while, and so I kind of just put that sort of feel into it. And I was a big fan of that sort of music anyway. Like she had told me, like, when when she had mentioned that she was going to go down to Alabama, that I was the only one whose eyes lit up when she said that. And I said, oh yeah, like, that's an amazing trip. I can't believe you're doing that. She's like, nobody else seems to really.
We went the week after Trump got elected as well, so there was Tawny was a little bit, where are we going? Where are we going now?
It was a lot of fun, and it was just like kind of like an instant mesh. Like, it just sounded really good, us all playing together. And then
we played with David Hood, who played on, he's even mentioned in Mavis. He goes, Little David now.
Yeah. Little David, yeah.
What's that song? Oh, you on that song as well, haven't you?
Yeah.
Remember that night Mavis sang you?
Yeah, right, yeah.
That was that. I'll take you there. Dave Hooksford. You were the little David that night. That was your book launch.
I didn't know
that.
I couldn't believe that. It was so fantastic. Yeah. It was your book came out, and Mavis was up on stage singing, Dave Hookstra.
I love it.
Well, she's
so
genius.
Yeah, just for 101, give us a little background on Bethany, and also it's important to talk about Norbert and even his connection with Dan Fogelberg.
Oh, yeah.
I know. I just saw Dan Fogelberg's acoustic guitar.
Norbert, you guys were on the radio show with me with Norbert.
Yeah,
he came in.
That was
amazing.
Yeah. But tell the listeners who Bethany and Norbert are.
I worked with Tawny. Newsom, yeah. First of all, and then I said, yeah, you're a really good singer. She said, no, you should hear my friend Bethany. And I came and did some backing vocals with, although she was in the Skull Orchard with me, Tony, she got Bethany in to do backing vocals on some Waco Brothers stuff. And it was like the pair of them together was pretty overpowering. And they were just fun, and we got on really well. And then they said, we should make an album together, and I'd do something, you know, next thing. And then I met Norbert, and he said, you sing like a pirate, you've got to come down to Muscle Shoals and make a record. Yeah. Because pirate music is big down there. And obviously. So Bethany, yeah, Bethany's an actor, and Tony's, they're both actors, and they're both quite successful, to be quite honest. Bethany mostly in musical theatre, and now Tony's the queen of podcasts and in a Star Trek animated show, and she's also in what's it called, the other one? Space Force.
Yeah.
So she's doing pretty well. Oh, she's pretty popular now. They're on the old TVs and the cables and all that. So, but yeah, we just decided that was the time to do it. And literally went to Alabama the week after the Trump election and wandered into this studio, the Nut House, with one of the engineers who worked originally at Fame, and then he set up his own place. I said to Norbert, aren't we going to Fame to record? And he was like, well, we could, but it kind of smells funny.
And Norbert, I mean, Fogelberg, early Buffett. Who else did Norbert work with?
He claims responsibility for forcing Jimmy Buffett to have marimbas. Yeah. He said, come down, let's go, let's take these songs and let's go on my yacht and sail around the Gulf and then put marimbas on it and stuff. Yeah. And Jimmy Buffett was like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to wear jackets. And then it became,
Norbert created, he didn't create a parrot head genre for me, unfortunately.
Those first couple of Buffett albums aren't bad.
He's an interesting guy. People kind of slag him off, but I don't know. There's a whole thing around it I don't particularly get, but yeah. I've heard the things that Jimmy Buffett does with his money, which are pretty cool.
Yeah.
He sends a lot of money to the inner cities. And,
you know. Yeah. He's also big in the environment, the Everglades and all that.
It's cool. People do what they do. I didn't really know much about Dan Fogelberg, but I think Norbert, that was one of his most proudest things.
Yeah,
we
were talking about that last night. Yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah, I think he actually helped him get signed originally too. So,
what's it been like for you to work with John? And what's it done for your head?
Rubbish.
It's
been awful, Dave. Awful.
The worst thing.
Yeah. It's terrible. It's been the worst time of my life.
It's actually been kind of amazing. Just because, you know, like when I was growing up, I listened to anything and everything. In fact, I have a very early memory of reading the Chicago Tribune. I think this is like 89. Yeah, this is when Greg Kot reviewed Lee Mekon's Rock and Roll. And I remember reading the review of that in my grandmother's house. And I'm like, oh, I want to listen to that record. And I couldn't find it because I was, you know, 10 years old.
Where was this? What was this in Chicago?
Yeah, it was in Chicago. Yeah. And I would spend weekends and I would read the paper. And I remember, and I'm like, this record sounds really interesting. And I didn't listen to it until I was in high school, but I loved it. And then I just thought it was kind of funny that, like, years later, like, our paths would cross that way. And
well, that was another record that really got picked up in Chicago. You know, Fear and Whiskey, the first sort of rootsy sort of record we made. And then when Rock and Roll came out, it was a kind of, we were on a major label, and the one time where it kind of really stuck was in Chicago. And I know Johnny Mars used to play that track Memphis Egypt on XRT, and people would tell me, you were on the radio again the other night, you know, you got to get over here. And then, you know, the Mekons became basically based in Chicago in the 90s. We were on Touch and Go Records, who were included in the exhibition.
Yeah.
I noticed.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Fantastic inclusion. And that was, we had, you know, after all our battles with major labels in the music industry, we come to Chicago, we're in this sort of safe harbor where we feel valued and supported for 15 years before they kind of, you know, cut back.
But yeah, no, I just felt like, you know, I'm actually playing with people, you know, like that. You know, like, they have as varied of interests as I do in all sorts of genres. And I love just fitting in wherever I can and creating something neat and just making, you know, and just kind of making things, you know. I love kind of fitting in where I can. So
John passed the Sally Timms test.
What's that?
She approves of him.
What?
She approves of him.
Oh, she does.
Makes everything sound better.
Yeah.
Let's get him to get John to play. It makes it all sound better. Yeah. That's what we want.
But I mean, that's what we tried to do with this. I mean, this is, you know, it's 3,000 square feet or whatever, but it's like all kinds of genres. It's, yeah. Illinois is, there's a lot of stuff going on here. I think I told you there was an email I got from somebody from Texas who came to see this, and he goes, I never knew all this stuff was happening in Illinois, and then he focused in on the Sundowners. He goes, we're going to hear more of their songs and stuff, but there's just a lot of music.
I mean, you know, maybe you should tour. Is there a way to do that? You can keep it together and have it go to other places.
I don't know about that.
This should go to Chicago, to be honest.
It should, actually.
Lance said it's all going to be archived forever.
Yeah, like, but it should.
iCloud or something.
It should go to Chicago.
It should go to Chicago.
Because people, there's nothing in Chicago.
I know.
There's absolutely no proper formal recognition of anything that's happened in music. It's such a big musical town. You go to all these other places. I mean, like I said, the Country Music Hall of Fame, even the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. You know, I know that's a national thing, but Chicago's kind of pathetic on that level.
You know, and we were saying that. I mean, nobody's proved this wrong. I mean, we were talking about this last night. This is probably the first collection of artifacts in any museum in Illinois like this, from musical artifacts, you know. The Chicago History Museum's done blues stuff and stuff like that, and Chess has their little back room. But
well, you got the Sundowners, you got Howlin' Wolf, you got Miles Davis, you got
Ollie and his polka.
Yeah. Amazing, yeah.
Rick Nielsen's, you know, guitars. It's like, it's Illinois, it's like it's a country. It's a big, in any other continent it would be a country to itself, and it would be, you know.
So I wanted to, you guys, I want to really plug this. I went out and bought it, got it a couple. So talk about, because John, you were very involved with this, both Johns, yes. But talk about the closing time and the Tom Waits thing, especially how important it is to have this out now.
Well, Greg Orley used to be like the head brewer at Goose Island and then left and formed his own cider company, Virtue Cider. Yeah, even my Sharpie says Virtue Cider.
Virtue Cider?
He's up in Fenville, Michigan. Yeah, right. He's got a cidery up there. And I was one of his guinea pigs when he started. He used to make ciders and make me drink
them. Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, no, yeah. No, we were both, we had kids at the same high school, and me and him being, you know, kind of in the whatever business we were in, we were always picking the kids up. So we used to stand around and talk about stuff. And when he said he was interested in cider, I'd go back over to Wales and take pictures from my, like, you know, the spa 7-Eleven shop by my mum's house and say, look, there's 28 different variants of cider on sale in this, like, corner store. And, you know, you go to a bar in Chicago, there'd be one. So he did, you know, he really kind of realized there was a market for making quality good cider, and I've always drunk cider. I love it. And he came to me and said, I want to do something for the music community during the lockdown. I think we should re-record this, you know, put some musicians to work. You could organize it. I'd like to pay for you to re-record Closing Time by Tom Waits. Not an album I was that familiar with, and I went away and listened
Waits
to
first
it.
First album, right?
Yeah, this is first album. So what appealed to me, and I'm not sure whether, I love the title, The Closing Time. It resonated with what was going on in Chicago at the time. All the clubs were closed. All the, you know, sound men and the roadies and the bar staff were all at work. And it, the idea of making some money for Civil, which is, the group that's the club owners put together to lobby for, you know, some sort of money for the clubs and to keep some support for them. It just seemed like a really positive idea. And then I listened to the record and it was like, well, this isn't the Tom Waits I know. This isn't Tom, the fully formed Tom Waits that my mates used to listen to in the 80s. This is more of a kind of songwriter who's trying to find what direction he's going in. And it really lent itself to the idea of having different people singing the songs. So we kind of split the album down the middle and sent, because it was all done in isolation. So yeah. I'd had a nightmare bureaucratic experience trying to make a Mekons album like that, because we had an album. We were going to Spain to record an album, and it got cancelled, obviously, with the lockdown. So we made one in the on our phones and sent it all around. It was just a crazy nightmare. And I kind of learned a lot doing that, and I learned, oh, we could do this a lot more efficiently. So me and John kind of became a pod, and we had our mate Barclay Mackay, who's got a beautiful grand piano in his studio in Leeds in England, and we sent him, you start six of the songs, we'll start six of the songs, and I'll start calling friends and people that, I wanted to get a collection of people who were important to the music scene in Chicago, who had come out of that Chicago independent venue scene. So people were very generous, you know, people like Andrew Bird, the Handsome Family, you know, Robbie Folks have now moved out of town, but also someone like Jeff Tweedy, who's in town, and Janet
Tweedy with the Handsome Family on here.
Yeah, I snuck that on him. Yeah. I went down to New Mexico earlier this year and I gave Brett the album from the Handsome Family. He went, "What? I was Tweedy on this." I put him on it. And he was like, "What?" But my favorite album of theirs is, I think it's called Through the Trees. And Jeff helped them a lot with that album when they was, I think it was only their second or third album. And it's beautiful. And he sings a lot of backing vocals on that album. And it's really lovely record. So I just thought that'll be a kind of sneak reunion. But they didn't know about it till they got it. So we should do that song, actually.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because that's the song Greg wanted me to sing. He said, "You should sing Rosie." And I was like, and I listened to it and I was like, I could just hear Brett from the Handsome Family singing it. And I just, no, I think. So Bartley basically played the piano in Leeds, sent a file over to New Mexico, to Albuquerque, where Brett and his mate Alex McMahon put some steel guitar on him and Rennie sang on it. They sent it back to me and we fiddled with it a bit and then Jeff Tweedy sang on it. And so, all better singers than me, unfortunately. So here we go. Ready? One, two. Well, I'm sitting on my windowsill, blowing my horn. Nobody's up there but the moon and me, and a lazy old tomcat on a midnight spree. All that you left me was a melody. Rosie, why do you evade? Rosie, how do I persuade? Rosie, up full and big, apricot tips in an indigo sky, and I've loved you, Rosie, since the day I was born, and I love you, Rosie, till the day I die. Rosie, how do you evade? Rosie, how can I persuade? Rosie. Blowing my horn. Nobody's up here but the moon and me, and a lazy old tomcat on a midnight spree. All that you left me was a melody. Rosie, why do you evade? Rosie, how can I persuade? Rosie.
Beautiful.
I don't know what that code was at the end. That was jazz.
It was jazz, yes.
The closing time, and that's under the Pine Valley Cosmonauts. People looking for it?
Yeah, it's only really available from Virtue. It's quite expensive. It's a lovely fat vinyl pressing by the Smash Plastic people in Chicago, local pressing plant.
Virtue Cider.
Yeah, you have to go to their website, Virtue Cider, and it's on their merch page. But all the money from that record is kindly donated to CIVIL, which is the campaign for the independent venue. No, was it? The Chicago Independent Venue League. Yeah. I can never say that.
How come? Did Rosie Flores want to do that song?
No, she didn't get chosen.
Rosie Flores does Old 55 on here. Now, people might know that.
Yeah, Bethany Thomas sings on that as well. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to single people out because every track is solid, but we were talking last night, talk about Howie's track.
How Gelb from...
I didn't know much. I know Giant Sam, but I didn't know much.
Yeah, about How Gelb from Giant Sam, he recorded that down in Tucson, Arizona, and he's... he's just become a friend over the years. I've always loved Giant Sand. They were a band that I felt kind of mirrored some of the Mekon's interests. Uh-huh. You know, just that kind of like, we're going to do what we want and we don't care. I like that about him. And how I think he sent me three takes and they were all numbered, like curious things like take 87 and tape 93. And we listened to him and then he sent another. No, I think this is the one. And we got like take 102 and... got Gene Cook to put some strings on it, and there it was. That's a pretty interesting version of a Tom Waits song. Martha,
Grapefruit Moon. We have Nora O'Connor's on here.
Oh yeah.
Playing with Nora
Whitfield.
Playing with Nora O'Connor tomorrow at the Hideout in Chicago. Right. Yeah. So we're doing a day for Joe Camarillo tomorrow. The Waco Brothers, Hush Drops drummer. He died in January, and we're just gonna have a big celebration of his life because. He was the best.
He was.
Got a couple more questions, and we're going to bring Terry Hammard in here. I got two questions I've never asked you before, I don't think.
Are they personal?
I've interviewed you a million times. So, Pine Valley Cosmonauts, Waco Brothers, Mekons, I'm going to miss somebody, the Three Johns, the Killer Shrews, Skull Orchard, the Wee Harry. Have you ever gone on stage or done something where you forgot what band you were in?
There's blurry areas. You know, sometimes when me and Sally get up and do things, we're not quite sure what we're supposed to be doing and what we're allowed to do. And, you know, it's kind of all, I don't know. There's a new band now called the John Langford and His Fancy Men.
Yeah, right. I heard you auditioning names for that.
Which is, somebody said the Gentleman Callers. And I was like, oh, Gentleman Callers is quite good. But I thought, my grandmother would have said, oh, she wouldn't have said, she said, oh, your auntie's got a fancy man. She wouldn't have said it in a Yorkshire accent, though, because she's Welsh. That's not strange. Yancy's got a fancy man.
Who's in that band? And
It's me and Dan Massey's been playing drums with me for years. He used to play with Robbie Faulks in his major label days. And we met on a plane going to South by Southwest. We ended up sat next to each other. We never really met and just got on really well. I said, we should play together. So we've always been... He was always the stand-in for Joe. Joe had a lot of health issues over the last few years, so... Dan's been playing with the Waco Brothers quite a lot, and he played on a Skull Orchard record back in, you know, we did a lot of touring together, actually. We did a weird This American Life tour, and then we did a thing called The Executioner's Last Songs, and Dan was involved in all of that. So he was the natural, you know, successor for Joe. But we wanted to have a different band during the pandemic, and Dean's, like, in Milwaukee and now moving to Lafayette, and it was just really hard to get together. And it was me and John, like I said, we'd already kind of decided we were a pod, so Dan and Alan were kind of cool to get together, and we started writing and recording. And I wanted to play the 2021 was 2020 was the year of like acoustic shows in people's back gardens and stuff like that, and I just thought I need to rock out before I get too old.
Well, you people have said that. I mean, you really stayed busy and prolific during this pandemic.
I think during the first year of it was interesting to be pivoting and trying to like help like clubs to put on different things and doing live streaming stuff like that. This year I found much more problematic because I'm not. A lot of people just seem convinced it's over and we don't have to get vaccinated. We'll wear masks and we just go back into the clubs and have a good time because we love freedom. And it's all this, to me, this is like not comfortable. And I know a lot of musicians have got sick because they've been put in these positions of going back into full capacity clubs, and it's awkward. I mean,
it's tough on them.
I think this year's been harder. For me, this year's been harder than last year.
Yeah.
Last year was kind of like, all right, well, let's find ways to make something work. And then this year, it's kind of everyone's, half the people think there's not a problem. And it's, there's still a problem. So.
I listen to this oldie station on satellite radio, 60s, and there's always some story about like some guy from the association on the oldies tour going in the hospital with COVID. And it's always, you know, older musicians are really vulnerable to this.
Yeah.
You know, you're not backed up.
And, yeah. We've lost people, you know, it's either, I don't know, people started off, it was a hoax, and now it's like this thing that illegal immigrants are bringing over the border. It's just kind of why this is a political issue for the right. It baffles me. It's a public health issue, and people. Yeah. This country's so fueled by this kind of libertarianism and this kind of me thing that people just at the act of putting a mask on seems to terrify people.
We're going to get ready to kick us out of here. I had one more question for you.
Sorry, I got too political and they're shutting us down.
I got two quick things.
Abraham Lincoln would have worn a mask and been vaccinated.
You could get one of those Abraham Lincoln. I'm going to get one before I go there. You get Abraham Lincoln.
I want one, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to get one of those.
I wanted to touch, since we're here, and then could you do a song to sign us out?
Yeah, what would you like?
But I did want to ask you, and then I'll put my stuff together here like we're doing. Talk about your real quick about your involvement in the Country Music Hall of Fame, since we're in a museum here, and especially
I didn't think, you know, they asked me to do a painting for them, but that was kind of nice, and I thought, I didn't really think that much more of it. I thought they thought of me as just a painter. They probably didn't know anything about what the other stuff I did, but they did, and they really wanted me to be involved because they knew about the stuff I've kind of written about country music and the positions that bands like the Waco Brothers and the Mekons have taken in relation to country music. And I was shocked at how deep and scholarly the whole process was. And I think that exhibition was fantastic, the Dylan Cash and Nashville Cats.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. And it was this actually reminds me of it, because it's like sometimes museums seem very sterile, and it's kind of this almost like there's too much. But this has embraced the music, and there's a lot of video and imagery and stuff here.
It's a very warm vibe. It's really.
And that's what I thought. And I was really sad when the Dylan Cash and the Nashville Cats, it got extended about three times, and it was the biggest exhibition they'd ever had, because you had basically Dylan people coming into the museum as well as like Johnny Cash country fans. So it was kind of win-win. And they used my imagery throughout the whole thing, which was lovely, and made me artist in residence at the Country Music Hall of Fame, which was good for business, Dave. Not bad for business, I tell you.
And you worked with our buddy Jim Sheridan on that, right?
Yeah, we did.
Jim dearly.
Yeah. Well, he's the only, I'd say, seriously.
Jim's another one of my old drinking buddies back when he drank.
Yeah. Music was is a great collaborative art form, and anyone, you just put a couple of guys in a room with a guitar, they'll start making music together no matter who they are. They'll just want to play. And art is trickier, but with Jim Sheridan, that's the only time I've really made visual art as a collaborative process, and it was beautiful. We had some fights. We stayed up late and we shouted at each other, but we'd be in the museum at kind of 4 a.m. wrestling over a giant printing machine, but it was it was good.
Great guy. So before you sign off with the song, here's my second question I never asked you before, I don't think. Does Bob Dylan have some of your artwork on his bus? I've always heard that.
Charlie Sexton, who's Bob Dylan's guitarist, commissioned me to paint a little Hank Williams. And apparently it's on Bob's bus, but no one would know. No one would know, because no one goes on Bob's bus.
I swear that it's in Bob's bus, but no one.
Nick Tremulous asked his bass player. He knows. What's his bass player's name? I forget.
Oh, Tony?
Tony, yeah. Right. Tony Garcia. Yeah, he said, do you see John's painting on Bob's bus? And he would go, how would I have seen that? I've never been on his bus. So I will say, though, we did, for that exhibition, an illustrated, big, really huge print using the whole Hat Show Press letter print press process, but kind of bending it a lot with kind of like how I like to make art. And Jim and me, you know, worked together on that. That was the collaboration. But we also had collaboration from Bob Dylan. So we would send pictures of it and they would come back and say, yeah, we like this. This is good. And he was very, very supportive.
Did you work with Jeff Rosen?
Yeah. Yeah. There was Jeff. And Jeff would say, yeah, we...
Jeff's always been the supporter.
Well, Jeff would say we. And we'd say, who's he referring to with, if it's we?
Yeah.
Must be Bob. But Bob also went, came down to the exhibition one day and just sort of had a little private tour with his hoodie pulled up, wandered around.
Bob's a great guy. Have you ever met him?
I've never met him.
No. We interviewed him for the Staples Talk.
All right.
Just, you know, he wants to be an average guy. He really does.
Well, he's definitely not average. He might be a lot of things.
Yeah.
I just love the fact that he's however old he is and he's still confusing people.
Yeah,
still,
right.
There's, he can't do anything without it being controversial.
Yeah.
And people say he can't sing anymore. And it's like...
Oh, you should hear that.
He can sing.
That new box.
He just sings how he wants to sing.
That box set of his 80 to 85 stuff is really good.
Yeah. I'm curious about that.
Oh, it's really... He does Sweet Caroline.
Really?
Sweet Caroline. Yeah. I wish, there's a lot of weird covers on it, but that was an interesting period. Tight connection to my heart.
I saw him just before the pandemic, and he played down at UIC or
something.
Yeah,
I was at that show.
I thought it was one of the best.
Yeah.
Best shows I've ever seen him doing, one of my favorite shows ever. He did Girl from the North Country,
yeah,
which is the song we illustrated,
yeah,
me
right.
and Jim Sheridan, and they did a totally different version of that song, took it into like, it was almost like an old Irish folk song or something. It was just absolutely brilliant. And, you know.
I love you guys. Thanks for coming down.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for...
what should we play?
Where were we at last night? The Irish... What's that place called? The Irish Mist?
The Celtic Mist.
Celtic Mist. Thanks a lot. Introduce the song and sign us out.
Okay, we could do a song. This is for all the... We were talking about Charlie Watts earlier and people like that. This is for all the rock stars who've recently left the planet. Please tell us where you've gone and send messages of hope back to us. Oh, that's plenty tough for you and your mate.
One, two, three.
On this railway station, they look so beautiful while they wait. They all rush by me on the platform to find the train that's always late. I know everyone in this airport lounge. Got all their records and I know their names. Worried they won't make their connection. Waiting in line for the funeral plane. Hey rock star, where are you going today? Why are you leaving? Why are you going away? When will you come back again? When will you come back to stay? Take me with you, carry me away. Hey! I know every song in this dirty city. Like a tide on the radio waves. I love every song on that gospel station. I just wished I had a soul to save. Well, everyone just gotta keep moving. When you stop, that's when you die. Like the shark that must keep swimming. Shine like stars up in the sky. I know everyone at this punk rock disco. Cause we're still dancing to Brian and Dave. I got my Iggy Glam Popalago rhythm. Taking it with me to my grave. today? Why are you leaving? Why are you going away? When will you come back again? When will you come back to stay? Take me with you, carry me away. Oh, hey, rock star. Hey, rock star.
Hey, rock star.
Hey, rock star.
This has been the State of Sound podcast produced by the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. To hear other episodes and more information about the exhibit, The State of Sound, A World of Music from Illinois, visit musicfromillinois.com.